chapter 1. So we began a series going through the book of Philippians. This is message number 3 in the series entitled Gospel Minded. We're going to be looking at Philippians chapter 1, verses 3 through 8. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, ye all are partakers of my grace. For God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ. So Paul opened the letter in verses 1 and 2 with the standard salutation and greeting that we typically see in New Testament epistles. He identified the writer and the recipients and greeted them with grace and peace. And even though it is standard in a lot of ways, the situation, or the salutation rather, has some unique features to it in this letter. So we identified the unifying theme of the letter as having the right mindset, having the mind of Christ, as Paul says in Philippians chapter number 2. And Paul actually models this mindset right from the very start, the very first words of this letter. He refers to Timothy and himself as slaves of Jesus Christ, and he honors those in the church at Philippi as saints, and he acknowledges those church officers as bishops and deacons, but doesn't mention the fact that he himself is an apostle or any other merit that he might try to claim. So Paul set the tone right from the very start of this letter about the mindset that he wants for the Philippians to have, the mindset that he wants for us to have as well. And I also noted how that the opening of the letter consists of three parts. You have the salutation in verses 1 to 2. You have the thanksgiving in verses 3 to 8. And then you have the prayer in verses 9 to 11. And so we are moving to this thanksgiving part of the opening of the letter. And so in verses 3 to 8, Paul is expressing his thankfulness for the church in Philippi. And again, as we look at these New Testament epistles, we talk about sometimes standard conventions and that sort of thing. But these aren't just standard trivialities or just formalities that are to be observed. And this thanksgiving that Paul expresses for the church in Philippi is striking because it's quite specific and touches on important themes to come in this letter. And so it's clear from the thanksgiving that Paul and the church at Philippi share a great love for each other, and it's clear also what it is that actually binds them together from this thanksgiving section. So we want to look at this in two parts, verses 3 to 6, where we see partnership in the gospel, and verses 7 to 8, where we see participants in grace. So we'll begin in this first part here, verses 3 to 6, and this partnership in the gospel, and this verse number 3 that gives us a statement of thanksgiving. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. And verse 4 reads, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy. Now the word for remembrance that Paul uses, it means to recall to mind. It's nothing mysterious about that, to remember, to think of. But it's not that Paul forgot the Philippians, but that every recall of them to mind prompts thanksgiving from Paul to God for them. Now, he was obviously reminded of them by the presence of Epaphroditus, who had came from Philippi to Rome, where he was a prisoner. And then he would have been reminded of them, no doubt, in the absence of Epaphroditus when he departed to go back to Philippi and, in fact, carry this very letter with him. He would have been reminded of the Philippians by any sort of news or communication that he may have had with them. And obviously there was some communication because he writes in this letter how that they had heard, news had reached them about the sickness of Epaphroditus. But besides all of these sort of things, he might think of them often for many different reasons. Just as when we are separated from those that we care about, and we may simply wonder what they're doing or wonder how they're doing, or something may happen that just sort of triggers a memory or a thought about them, and we may think about them. So Paul is expressing that he was often, no doubt, remembering them, recalling to mind those in the church at Philippi. And not only did he recall the Philippians, but this also prompted thanksgiving from him. So upon his every remembrance, he says, "I thank my God, and always in every prayer of mine for you all, making requests with joy." So he made requests for the Philippians. That word means essentially a petition. And so in this context, obviously Paul is making prayer or making requests to God for the church in Philippi. Now, what the substance of that prayer request is going to be will be elaborated on in verses 9 to 11. We're not looking at those here this morning. So Paul emphasized the fact that when he prayed, when he made requests, he went to God for them, for their good and for their benefit. And when he prayed for them, Paul says that he did so with joy. Now, this doesn't mean that Paul had no serious concerns for the Philippians, and he certainly mentioned some of those in this letter, but simply that he was filled with gladness in his prayers for the church in Philippi. So there's a different tone to this letter than, say, 2 Corinthians or Galatians, as both of them are quite harsh and severe letters. And Paul was very grieved when he wrote those letters to those particular churches. So obviously there's a different tone here. And it gives us evidence that the purpose of this letter was not to address some major problem within the church. Not to say certainly that the church at Philippi was a perfect church, but Paul had much to be thankful for in this church. He had much to be glad about, and his remembrance of them and his prayers for them were made primarily with joy. And in fact, this is the first mention of joy in this letter, which is an important theme in the letter, joy and rejoicing. So overall, Paul's relationship with the church in Philippi was a strong relationship, and it was also a happy relationship. His relationship with the church at Corinth at times was very grievous to Paul, and he talked about how the more that he loved them, the less he was loved by them, and many of the griefs and tears that were brought about. He had great concerns, obviously, for those churches of the province of Galatia, as he wrote to them as well. But to the church in Philippi, he mostly has good and commendable things to say about them, and had a glad relationship with that particular church. Now, as we get to verse 5, we see the first reason that Paul gives for the glad thanksgiving that he prayed for them and to God for them. In verse number 5, he writes, "For your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now." Now, the first day that he refers to here looks back to that Sabbath day by the river outside of the city of Philippi, when God opened up Lydia's heart to believe in Jesus Christ as Paul preached the gospel there. That's Acts chapter 16, verses 13 to 15. So Lydia was saved, and she was baptized, and her house became the meeting place for the new church in Philippi as Paul continued on there for some time before he would have to leave the city. But Paul says, from the first day until now, until the present time, the time that he is writing this letter to him. That means that the Philippians had continued and were presently continuing at the writing of this letter to be in fellowship in the gospel with Paul. So at least for 10 years by this time. Now, what is especially significant about that is the fact that for Paul, that now meant being a prisoner in Rome, a prisoner with the likely prospect of execution. Now, we know that didn't happen with his first Roman imprisonment, but it did happen with his second Roman imprisonment. But he knew that it was a very likely outcome for his case. The charges against him, for instance, if you think back to Philippi in Acts chapter 16 and verses 20 and 21, they had charged Paul with disturbing the peace and teaching an illegal religion. And so these charges that were against him as he went to Rome, they amounted to treason against the Roman Empire, which was a capital offense and one that all indications of history are that they had zero tolerance for what they deemed to be treason against the Roman Empire. And so these were the charges against him. And so being associated with Paul was something that was dangerous. It was something that could have repercussions with it. So for those in the city of Philippi to maintain a connection and a communication with Paul, to send Epaphroditus to Paul in Rome and to receive Epaphroditus back in Philippi, to be sending him money while he is under arrest there in Rome and to be helping him in any way is something that could have some repercussions with it. In fact, he would have to write in his letter to the young man Timothy and tell him not to be ashamed of his chain, of his imprisonment. But despite the fact that Paul is a prisoner in Rome, he says that their fellowship in the gospel has continued until now. So their love and their support for Paul had not wavered. And they had recently sent Epaphroditus to him at a great sacrifice to themselves. So they had persisted, in other words, in their fellowship with Paul in the gospel. And that is the reason for his thanksgiving. He says, for your fellowship in the gospel. That was continuing even though Paul had been a prisoner for some time. Now the word for fellowship that Paul uses doesn't describe a casual sort of mutual interest. Now, sometimes we meet people in some public place and maybe we recognize something that is a mutual interest. Maybe they're reading a book that we like or an author that we like or in a waiting room or something. Or maybe something they're wearing, like a shirt or a hat or a jacket, has some sort of logo or something on it. Maybe there's something about them. We identify some sort of hobby or some sort of interest that we like, and we may talk with them for a few minutes. We may even have some good conversation, and typically we will leave and we'll go on our way, and there will probably be no further contact with them. May never even see them again, may not even really think about them much after the time has passed. We just happened to be in the same place for a time, realized we had some mutual interests, we were able to talk about that and have some fellowship, so to speak, around that. But really, once we're gone, we're back to our life, they're back to their lives, and we all go on. Well, that's not the sort of thing that Paul is describing when he speaks of the fellowship in the gospel that he had with the church in Philippi. He didn't pass through Philippi and simply make some friends over some shared interests and maybe like tent making or the Colosseum or the Isthmian Games, all things that Paul referred to at different times in his letters. And they may have had some shared interest in those things, but that was not what Paul was giving thanks to God for this church in Philippi. The word that he uses actually means partnership. And it is something that indicates an active participation between Paul and between the Philippian church members. The word was something that was used to describe business partnerships, for instance. So say a couple of different people went in together and maybe they purchased a fishing boat and they were going to go into the fishing business or what have you. And so they would be partnering together in that business. They both would have a vested interest in that business and a participation in it. Well, that's what this word would describe. So Paul describes their partnership in the gospel that he was thanking God for and that brought him much joy. So that tells us that the Philippians were working together with Paul for a purpose, but what was that purpose? Well, the purpose simply stated here in verse number 5 is the gospel, the good news. What does Paul mean by that? Well, given the short length of this letter, Philippians has the most frequent references to the gospel and gospel proclamation of all of Paul's letters. So if we're just speaking in terms of concentration or density, if you will. Well, the message of the gospel is just as Paul wrote in his letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 1 to 4. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel which I preached unto you, which also ye have received and wherein ye stand, by which also ye are saved, if you keep in memory what I have preached unto you, unless you have believed in vain. For I delivered unto you first of all that which I also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day according to the Scriptures. Then he goes on to speak of the witnesses who saw him after his resurrection. So the message of the gospel is the message of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, for sins and for his resurrection for the justification of all who believe in him by faith. Now, Paul certainly, when he says that they were partners in the gospel with Paul, he doesn't mean less than the message of the gospel, but does he mean more? Well, Paul used this term gospel 9 times in this letter to the Philippians. It's here in verses 5, 7, 12, 16, and twice in verse 27. It's in chapter 2, verse 22. It's in chapter 4, verse 3, and verse number 15. So he does use this term a lot in this letter. Paul also uses words that are for or are related to preaching or public proclamation 10 times in this letter. So here in chapter 1, verses 14, 15, 17, 18, and 22, chapter 2, verse 25 and 30, chapter 3, verse 2, chapter 4, verse 3, and 17. So you can see that this term gospel and terms for public proclamation are just throughout this letter, very frequent, very dense within this letter. And when we put this together with the fact that Paul's phrase puts the gospel as the result, in other words, they are partners together to what end, to what result, or to what goal, to what purpose? Well, to the purpose of the gospel. So the partnership with the Philippians means that Paul and the Philippians are working together for the proclamation of the gospel, or what we might call gospel work or mission work or evangelization or whatever you want to refer to. In other words, Paul doesn't say they were partners just in the gospel message, but by this means they are partners with him in the proclamation of the gospel message. That means that they are participating with Paul in the mission of gospel proclamation. And that's actually a recurring theme in the letter. We have it here. We have it in verses 12 to 14, verses 19 to 20, verses 27 to 30 in chapter 1. In chapter 2, we have it in verses 12 to 18 and verses 25 to 30, and then again at the end of the letter in chapter 4, verses 10 to 20. So in what ways did the church at Philippi partner with and participate with Paul in gospel proclamation? Well, it's obvious from the letter that they sent money to Paul to support him in this work. I mean, Epaphroditus brought that to Paul in Rome in chapter number 2, verses 25 to 30. And so that's the occasion that Paul had for writing this letter when Epaphroditus is returning and carrying this letter to thank them. So we know that they sent money to Paul. But not only did they send money to Paul in Rome in his imprisonment, but also when you look at the end of the letter in chapter 4, verses 10 to 20, they had given repeatedly to Paul to support him in the work that he was doing and even during his time of imprisonment. So this wasn't just a one-time occurrence with this church. They had been persistent and consistent in doing this. Well, we could also say that they certainly supported Paul in prayer. In fact, in chapter 1 and verse 19, he says, "For I know that this shall turn to my salvation through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ." So they were faithful to support Paul with money and with help in that way. They were faithful to support Paul with prayers. They were faithful in that way. But also, when we look at this letter and really beginning at verse 12 in chapter 1 and going through verse 18 of chapter 2, it's clear that the Philippians themselves were also engaged in gospel proclamation. So in all of these ways, Paul says that they were partners together in the work of the gospel. And that was a reason for great joy for Paul. And that was a reason for thanksgiving to God. Every time that he recalled the Philippians or something would bring them to mind, he would pray for them and with great joy would make certain requests for them. So all of this served to strengthen their connection to one another and increased Paul's joy, even though we have to keep in mind that Paul is writing as a prisoner in Rome. And again, very likely anticipating execution, but yet can write about having great joy and can write about having reason to joyfully express thanksgiving to God and to make request for the Philippians. But there's also a second reason for Paul's thanksgiving, and we see that in verse number 6. "Being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ." So Paul expressed confidence. He says, being confident. And that word means that he was convinced. He was persuaded. He was confident that God had begun a work in them, meaning that God would finish that work or would complete it. And Paul used this same word that we see here. This is, "He that hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ," which sort of has the sound to our modern ears that he's going to continue ongoing. But the word that is used actually means that he's going to bring it to completion. So it is going to be ongoing, but God has started something that he's going to finish at a future time. That's what the word means. So Paul has used this same word when he spoke about completing the offering for the saints in Jerusalem. He mentioned that in the letter to the Romans in chapter 15 and verse 28. He also mentioned it in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 6 and verse 11. Finishing that offering. And that's the same word that Paul is using here to speak about the work that God had begun in the Philippians. He's going to bring it to completion. He began it in you, and he's going to finish it at a future time that he mentions as the day of Christ. Now, in that passage in 2 Corinthians chapter number 8, it's interesting that Paul commends the Macedonian churches as an example. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 to 5, he says, "Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. Now, Paul uses a number of similar terms. He speaks about this fellowship of the ministering to the saints, same term as the fellowship in the gospel. In the next verse, actually in verse 6, I didn't read, he will mention they will finish this grace. He uses that same term here when speaking about the Philippians. Now, the churches of Macedonia, which included the church at Philippi and the church at Thessalonica, but the church at Philippi was obviously a leading church that Paul was speaking of in example of giving, and that's apparent by chapter number 4 of this letter. And so Paul says that God had begun a good work in them, and he would perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. In other words, their salvation, begun by God, will be completed in the day of Jesus Christ, or the day of Christ. Now, this is a reference to the future return of Jesus Christ. That means blessing and reward for those who believe in him. Now, Paul mentions this time directly here in verse 6, again in verse 10, and in chapter 2, verse 16. And he does it without using the day of Christ terms, but he mentions this same time in chapter 3, verses 20 and 21. So again, this will be a theme in this letter as well. He orients their mindset to include the future imminent return of Jesus Christ. God has begun this good work in you, and he's going to complete it. And you say, well, but the Philippians have long since, 2,000 years, they've been dead and gone, and they've went on to be present with the Lord when they've absented their bodies on this earth. So, wouldn't it all be over for them? Well, no, it's not, because they've not yet been glorified. They've not yet experienced that resurrection that will come with the day of Christ, with his return. And that's what Paul is referring to. God began this work of salvation in you that assures you that future glorification that he wrote about in the letter to the Romans. And he said, if God began this work, God's going to complete this work. And in that future time of the resurrection, then that full glorification will be had, and that work of salvation will be brought to completion. That's the end. That's the end goal for those that believe in Jesus Christ. But here's the question. How was Paul confident about that? How could Paul write to this church and say that he was confident that God was going to complete this work in the day of Christ? You're going to be resurrected to glorification. How could he be confident about that? Well, by saying this, Paul is not referring here to some sort of special apostolic insight that he had, that he could just look into hearts, or he could just look upon people and maybe see a certain color for yes and a certain color for no. Okay, this is person saved, this is not a person saved. That's not why Paul said that he was confident. Paul said that he was confident because the evidence that they gave that God's work had begun in them. So on the one hand, this evidence is that of obvious conversion. So Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians chapter 1 and verse 9. He says, "For they themselves show of us what manner of entering in we had unto you, and how ye turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God." And so the conversion to Jesus Christ includes a very real change of mind, change of heart, change of life that accompanies salvation. So that certainly is an evidence of God having begun a work in us. However, Paul is going beyond just that. With the Thessalonians, he said, "You turned from idols to the living God." That's remarkable. But he said not only that they turned to God, but that they turned from idols to serve the living God. In other words, there was a change of life from that day, a change of walk. So here is the evidence that the Philippians are, or that God, or that Paul is confident that God had begun a work in the Philippians, and that was their partnership in the gospel. That was the evidence that Paul gave as to why he was confident. Paul was confident of their salvation because of their sacrificial giving to support gospel proclamation, because of their continued prayers for gospel proclamation, and because of their ongoing engagement in gospel proclamation. He said, you are partners with me in the work of the gospel, and I am confident that God has begun a work in you. And if he's begun a work in you, then I know beyond all doubt that he's going to complete that work in the day of Jesus Christ. You are going to see full justification and glorification before God. Well, then we come to verses 7 and 8, where we see the participants in grace. Verse 7, even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, ye all are partakers of my grace. Now, the word for meet that Paul uses, it means just or righteous. In other words, Paul's saying that the joy that he has and the thanksgiving that he expresses for the Philippians and the confidence that he has that God has begun a work in them that he's going to complete is justified. That's what he's saying. It is justified that he thinks this of them. And this is the first occurrence of that word think. And here it is connected with heart. Heart refers to the mind and the feelings. Paul is saying that he has come to this conclusion, and it's justified that he has reached this conclusion about the Philippian believers because they give this evidence that God has begun a good work in them. And he further explains, actually verse 7 just sort of expands on what he said in their fellowship in the gospel. He says in verse number 7, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, ye all are partakers of my grace. So he says their participation in gospel proclamation in Paul's imprisonment, which is something that he's going to expand on in verse number 12, further explains their partnership in the gospel. So Paul speaks of his case. He uses these term bonds and defense. And defense is a legal term, and it speaks of Paul's legal situation and his trials. And he's speaking of his case as being a case of the defense and confirmation of the gospel. Paul's case is not whether or not he is a Roman citizen and whether or not his rights have been infringed as a Roman citizen. That's not what Paul sees his case as being about. His case is about the defense and confirmation of the gospel. In other words, it's the same intent as in verse number 5. So they're partakers, they're participants in the same thing as what he said in verse number 5. Now, the word for partakers, it means to be a sharer, to be a participant with Paul. And the word for grace might seem strange at this point. It might seem, in other words, to sort of generalize. Paul has been very specific, really, in this part so far, and it might seem to somewhat generalize, and we take grace with just to maybe mean goodwill or something of that nature, just something very general. But Paul's actually using that term here to refer to the work of the gospel, just the same as he was using gospel in verse number 5. And he did that very same thing in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse number 6 when he refers to that offering for the saints in Jerusalem. And he speaks of Timothy going there to perfect in them that grace also. In other words, their participation in that work. So what had happened with the church at Corinth was that when Paul was taking up that offering for the saints in Jerusalem, the church at Corinth had obviously pledged that they were going to give some amount. But they had been slow to deliver on that. And time had passed, and they hadn't done what they had said they were going to do. And so Paul in 2 Corinthians is writing to them that they need to do what they themselves had committed to do. And so he wants them to enjoy the fruit and the reward of full participation, not just that they desired to do something, but that they actually did it. And that's the way he uses that word grace there. So grace, when he says that they are partakers of my grace, it's not that Paul is conferring some sort of special grace to them or anything of that nature at all, but it's the same thing as fellowship in the gospel. You are participants in the work of gospel proclamation. And that is what is pointed out in his continued imprisonment, the bonds and the defense and the confirmation of the gospel. He begins to speak about that more in verse number 12. And then we have verse 8, the statement of Paul's love for the church at Philippi. He says, "For God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ." Now, the word for bowels literally means intestines, and it can more generally be put for internal organs, and that might sound a little crass to us, but we talk about having a gut feeling about something, or sometimes if we have maybe had some really hard news or some calamity, we might say something, you know, it's like we got punched in the gut or something like that. So not really all of that far off. It's somewhat similar. This was a phrase that was a figurative expression that was expressing deep inner feelings and affections. In other words, it would be the deepest affections that we as human beings could feel and could experience and have. And so Paul was simply making a statement of the depth of his love for the Philippian church members. And this is witnessed by God, and this is loved in Jesus Christ. In other words, another reference to what it is that binds them together. So let's think about this passage in terms of the unifying theme of this letter. So what do we see here about the mindset of Christ? Well, what we have in this thanksgiving section in the opening of the letter is we have Paul commending their mindset. He's actually commending them here because they were gospel-minded. The actions of the church in Philippi was not something that was well wishes for Paul and then forgetfulness. Well, you know, fare thee well, Paul, and we pray the Lord will prosper you on your journey. And in 10 minutes they're talking about the chariot races and have forgotten all about Paul. No, that's not the case at all. This was a predominantly Gentile church. Now, it probably consisted of some Jews and obviously Gentiles. There were probably also some slaves. There were probably also some free men. Of course, we know the case of Philemon, and we do know of some that were members of this church. But my point is that this was a church where there were people of different social categories that had very rigid boundaries within that culture. Rigid boundaries that did not move out of place. And just to think about how this worked, think about the church at Corinth and how they were observing the Lord's Supper much more like a Greco-Roman banquet of that time. They were observing all of the class and social distinctions, and the rich were coming, and they're having the favored tables, and they've got all of the food and drink, and they're being glutted on food and drink. And while there are poor who are attending and merely observing and not even able to participate, that is something that for so long I would read that in 1 Corinthians 11, and it seems so absurd to me. Like, I cannot even make sense of this until I understood historically about the social situation of the day and those Greco-Roman banquets and how they were structured and how they were divided by classes and how those were strictly observed. They were not crossed. So you have this sort of a situation in these churches. So this is a predominantly Gentile church that had great love and a great relationship with a born Orthodox Jew. They sacrificed for him. Even Paul says, out of the depths of poverty. In other words, they gave for Paul when they didn't have to give. And all while this born Orthodox Jew, this scourge of the Roman Empire, is a prisoner in Rome going to stand before Caesar himself, accused of treason against Rome, likely to be executed. What I'm saying is that I just don't know that we can appreciate how remarkable that this really was. How unusual that this really was. This didn't happen. This is not something that occurred. You didn't see this in every city in the Roman Empire as you traveled around. There's something going on here that is very different from the normal culture and social events of the day. And it was their love for Jesus Christ, and it was their concern for gospel work that bound them together in such an unheard of manner in that time. Good times, bad times, they were persisting in the proclamation of the gospel and the support of it. So their mindset was to focus on the gospel of Jesus Christ and to prioritize that message and that proclamation. And it was this focus and it was this commitment on the part of the church at Philippi that gave Paul such confidence that God had begun this saving work in them. So here we see again, being a Christian means being the slave of Jesus Christ, just as Paul started this letter. And it also means giving evident service to Him. And a church has to have this kind of focus, this kind of commitment and priority, has to have this kind of mindset, which is indeed the mind of Christ.